Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Well, hello, everybody. Good to see you. Tommy Joe Lucia here. I'm with Kendra Santos and Greg Teagarden. Welcome to episode 56. This is going to be an exciting one. We're going to talk all things PBR. Good evening, Greg. Good evening, Kendra.
How's y'all's temperature? Are you fiery or are you feeling calm?
I'm ready. I think this is going to be fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, so I think what we're going to do, friends and neighbors, all you know spinners, thank you for joining us on YouTube Live and Facebook Live, and those of you that are listening to the podcast or video on demand. What I was going to do was, Kendra, if you don't mind, let's take a couple minutes and kind of preview what we're going to talk about in case some of you don't know what's going on, don't know all of the inner workings of the rodeo business like we hear every day, and kind of go through that. So what are some things that interest you about the PBR that you think maybe the No Spinners would want to talk about, Kendra?
Well, I think as always, I think that things I'm curious to know, probably a lot of people are curious to know also. And I don't remember which years you started with the PBR. I was, you know, one of the original hires and worked as editor in chief for the PBR for the first 16 years. And so having been there from the very beginning, you know, all the way back when it was, you know, I used to always say cowboy owned and operated, and the whole, you know, the reasons that they broke off from professional rodeo and all that, you know, coming from that place, the evolution of it is fascinating to me, you know, where it's headed, how far it's come, how different it is now, you know, some of the new visions and goals. I'm just, you know, curious to stay up.
Well, that ought to be fun. And for me, what I'm most interested in, because there's a lot of there's a lot of truck seat conversation about the PBR and Cheyenne. And for some of you that don't know, I'll give you a quick little history. This is going to be kind of what I'm going to talk to Sean about. In 2025, the Cheyenne Frontier Days decided to do an Extreme Bulls, a PRC Extreme Bulls, replacing the PBR on July 21st and 22nd. That's this year. The PBR then booked at Canvas Stadium, 46 miles south on I-25, on the exact same dates, that's a Monday and Tuesday, they booked what they're calling Last Cowboy Standing event, and they've got Tim McGraw and John Party in concert. And so, you know, that seats 35,000 people. It's on the exact Monday and Tuesday. There's been a lot of he said, she said on how this all went down and why the PBR isn't there. And, you know, Sean, we'll hear this from him, but he basically said the ship has sailed with Cheyenne. And, you know, Tom Hersig said some things like, you know, we're focusing on our live show, and Extreme Bulls fits our, you know, our model a little bit better. And it's interesting to me, and I think this is kind of ironic, Cheyenne's theme for this year is the year of the bull rider. Which just throws a whole interesting spin into this after this change. And so, you know, I did talk to Tom Hersig this morning. I got some information. We'll talk about it with Sean. I'll bring it up. You know, it was the end of a contract. They had a 3-year contract. It was the end of the contract. And I did, when I was looking at this, it seems like the public opinion is split a little bit, Kendra, because I read one Facebook post that said, quote, "I did not enjoy the PBR live with all the breaks," meaning TV breaks. "I'm happy with the switch." Then I read one that said, "Extreme Bulls is less pyro, music, and more traditionalist. I think that fits Cheyenne." So that's kind of in favor of the change. But then I read one that said, "Looks like real bull riding will be in Colorado. That's where I'm going." So it's kind of a split decision, but like we always do, we're going to visit with Sean, talk about the PBR as a whole, what's going on, and get to the bottom, at least from his side, of what we're looking at here with Cheyenne and their event right down the road in Fort Collins. So if you guys are ready, we'll do the technical stuff and bring Sean in and get this kicked off. Home office you got?
Yeah, I got a few things up on the wall. I'm slowly but surely getting them up.
What's the guitar? Tell me about that.
That was a World Finals guitar when we had Steven Tyler, Casey Donahue, Neil McCoy, Colt Ford, George Thurgood, Lita Ford, Rick Springfield, Dustin Lynch, and others, and it's signed by all of them.
So you did the guitar before Houston? Is that what you're saying? Maybe Rodeo gave away guitars this year.
That's I don't keep track of who's doing what these days, Tommy.
Well, thank you for joining us on behalf of myself and Kendra. We appreciate it.
And, like our 20-year anniversary. It's our 20-year anniversary or something like that, isn't it, you two? Like,
yeah. It's been a while. That dates us. So I'm going to let Kendra kick it off with a few questions. I'm going to save it to just talk about Cheyenne in the end. I may throw a few comments in. I do want to say thank you very much for the access to the boss. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool for our listeners. So thanks for taking the time. Kendra, hey. let you go.
Well, first of all, thanks, because yes. I think, you know, we have questions that we're out on the street all the time. And so many times people speculate rumors, they have questions, but you know, it's hard for a lot of people to have the access. So thank you for being willing. And I think it would be good for one thing. Are you the CEO or the commissioner?
I'm both, actually. Oh, okay.
We had an argument about the title.
Yeah, it wasn't my choice, actually. They said I had to be commissioner because we have a teams league now. And then they're like, I'm like, well, who's going to be the CEO? And they're like, you are too. So two titles.
I trust
double
you.
Work, double work, too. Twice the job.
Okay. So, like, how long have you worked for the PBR, and how has your role changed over the years?
I think it's 25 years, coming up on 25 and a half. So I started in 99. I came in early on, and, I mean, you guys were around. There weren't very many of us in those days. Handled a lot of the merchandise and slowly worked into the sponsorships and fulfillments and, you know, one thing after another that there was nobody around to do. And then somewhere, I think in early 2000s, I took on the title of chief operating officer. And so I was COO from 2000 to 2010 or 11. And then I became president COO, and then I became CEO in 2015.
So do you feel like your role has, I mean, it to me, it kind of sounds like, well, if you're going to run a restaurant, it really helps if you've been a cook, a waitress, a purchasing agent, you know, all those kind of things. Do you feel like you've like the preparation for this, you know, puppeteer of the whole shoot and match, you've seen and lived every aspect of the business, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the departments I created, we didn't have a sponsor fulfillment department until we created it and started hiring people. And it was a relatively small marketing team until we started building out, you know, promoters and creative services and support internally. And so I guess I've had my hand in the development of pretty much every department in the PBR. I can trace my roots back to doing that job, or certainly putting the pieces in place to get it done.
I can remember. Okay. I can remember you hanging a sign or two.
Yeah, I hung a sign or two and cracked a couple panels in emergency situations only. But yeah.
Yeah, I remember. Also, it was at the Lazy E, and was it during COVID, and you had a backpack full of bleach and you were spraying down the chutes or something, right?
Yeah, we all thought we were going to die. So we were spraying the chutes down with bleach after every hour. I actually had people that told me that I was very reckless for putting us back to work, because I was going to kill at least a dozen people. And so the spray of bleach was more to put their minds at ease than mine.
Well, you guys have been, I mean, during, to get through all that, you guys lived in a freaking caravan pod, right? I mean,
we rented like 100 and some odd travel trailers from everywhere from Texas to Nebraska. I mean, we got our hands on every single travel trailer that we could find, or motorhome or whatever we could find. And we parked them, and they were all like four spaces apart, you know, 20 feet apart from each other. And we all had little wristbands. You could only talk to somebody in your color group with your wristband. You got caught talking to somebody else, you got kicked out of the circle.
I remember having to submit to a nasal swab to work one of those events.
Yeah, absolutely. We were probably testing before anybody in the world was, because I had found tests in Europe and had them sent over. And so we were testing on the first day of Lazy E, and that was in April. You know, that was only 41 days after the world shut down, and we had managed to find tests. And so we were testing, and we were, you know, social distancing, and, you know, had the food delivered to the gate, and somebody went out and sprayed it all down and then reloaded it up. You know, there was nothing that came inside of our circle at that point. But again, I think most of the rational people didn't think we were going to die from the cold. But, you know, it was for a lot of people that were kind of in fear for their health and their safety. At that point, we'd had one guy that got it at the Oklahoma City game, which shut down the world. And so we knew it was a real, real possibility.
From all the way back from the original days when, you know, the best bull riders in the world broke off, you know, the Cowboy owned and operated PBR on the premise that, you know, this was the most popular event, and it can make it as a standalone, best guys, best bulls, all that. And now, okay, it's evolved over time to be, you know, obviously more corporate in 2025. What do you feel like has changed the most about the PBR over the years?
Well, the bull riding, I would say, is still very much the same. I mean, we put the best guys in the world on the best bulls week in and week out. That has never changed or faltered along the way, but we've had a chance to grow our business. And in some areas, you know, we launched, coming out of COVID, we launched women's rodeo. We also put the first all black rodeo, Bill Pickett, on national television, and started laying some foundation to expand the PBR business beyond just the bull riding. And really the genesis of teams was born during that period of time too, because we went in June of that year, we went to South Point, and CBS didn't have any live sports programming whatsoever. And so we worked out a deal with them and launched the Monster Energy Team Challenge. It was the first experiment with the team event, and did it for a month in South Point. It was so much fun that it was the greatest set and the most fun that nobody else got to see in the world. Like literally nobody got in to see it, but we had these big video walls around this very small arena. It was the coolest thing we've ever done, but nobody got to see it.
The team still intrigues me, and I still don't really understand it. But for people who don't really understand the concept, I would love to know, like, well, for one, do you ever get exhausted from, you don't ever stop making changes, right? And always, you don't live inside the box, do you, right?
No, I think that, you know, the PBR changed when the bull riders broke away, and it just started a cause and effect in that we were able to go out and start introducing Western sports to a different consumer. You know, back in those days, you guys were there, you know, that we were in smaller venues, but we were still geographically spread out around the country, and we were getting to places that rodeos had long abandoned many, many years ago. And it just proved that there was a market for Western sports out there outside of the traditional places that Western sports were still really strong. And so that was the first real innovation. And I feel like we learned that we have to keep innovating and changing to meet the consumer's changing needs, or you just become stagnant and you start to fight over the same fan base and the, you know, and it doesn't grow. And so we want to push the envelope and keep growing the universe of Western lifestyle fans.
Right. I remember always, and I don't know if this is still the case, but I'd be curious, that the demographics were different between rodeo and the PBR. And it was, you know, back in the day, it was like the demographics of the PBR fans were more like concert goers, right? It wasn't not as hardcore Western. Is that, I mean, what are the demographics look like now?
I guess, you know, I get asked the demographic question a lot, and I always answer it with what city and on which night are you talking about? Because Madison Square Garden is 3 sold out days, and I can assure you, none of those people are rodeo fans. They don't have anything in their area that they can go to and enjoy rodeo on a week in, week out basis. So all of those are new fans to the sport. Now, hopefully some of them have made a trek to Calgary or Cheyenne or somewhere and experienced good rodeo outside of the PBR. But those for the vast majority of our fans, they're not rodeo fans. They're a mix of concert goers and NASCAR fans and UFC fans and other fans that just appreciate the sport when they discover it. And, you know, that's always been our job, is kind of get them in the door with the spectacle and then hook them with the sport.
The entertainment, the hardcore Western, you know, Americana, the traditions and all that of rodeo, and the entertainment, like the recent, I don't know if you guys call it an acquisition or how you call it, but how is the entertainment, you have to look at things differently, right? Like you are now in the portfolio with some, is it Ultimate Fighting? Forgive my ignorance.
Yeah, we're in the same ownership as UFC and WWE. So they're our sister companies.
How does that impact like you as an entertainment company? You know,
It opens up the door to a lot of resources and a lot of cross promotion. You know, there's nobody that's trying to make PBR like UFC or make it like WWE. Nobody's doing that. Nobody wants to do that because they know it's a recipe for disaster. But, you know, we just got done doing what we called the TKO takeover in Kansas City, Missouri, where PBR went on Thursday night, UFC went on Saturday night, and WWE Raw went on Monday night. And we were able to leverage a lot of production and marketing and the fan base to kind of cross over, and had 3 very, very successful events back to back in the same city. That's not the plan moving forward, to do that everywhere. But really, when you think about tapping into the resources and the expertise that UFC and WWE have, it's going to open a lot of new doors for PBR. I mean, we've opened plenty on our own, and every chapter I've been through, this is the 3rd time we've sold the company that I've been there. And every chapter has just gotten better, bigger and better. It's opened up more resources and more opportunities. And that's where we're at now.
It is like a nonstop evolution, basically. I mean, it doesn't
ever. You got to keep changing. We don't let the moss grow very long under our feet.
The teams concept is fascinating in such a historically independent event as bull riding. Speak about that. Like, how did you come up with, whoever would have come up with teams for bull riding? Like, how did that
happen? Apparently I did. So, you know, it started with the Global Cup, which was the World Cup way back when, you know, when we had the international competition between the 5 countries that we were competing in. And what you saw in that team format was this camaraderie and this excitement. And it really, it made every single bull ride matter more than it does in the individual competition. And I took note. And, you know, we experimented with it here and there. And every time we did it, it brought a new component for a sports fan or a fan in the audience. You know, and I've taken a lot of heat for trying to change the sport of bull riding, but the reality is we didn't change bull riding at all. It's 8 seconds, 1 hand in the air, 1 hand in the rope, same exact rules. But now for a more traditional sports fan, it's the scores go in the bucket and it's 89-90. And you know, the fan sitting in the audience knows that they need 2 points to take the lead at least. And it's much more relatable to a traditional sports fan than the complexities of individual bull riding. I mean, I've been doing this for 25 years. You guys have been around it. Explain the long rounds, the short rounds, the aggregate, and the season long trek to the finals, and then what happens. And you've got to be a real diehard fan to understand that. And it's a great product. Unleash the Beast and individual bull riding is still a phenomenal product. But teams opens up the world to a traditional sports fan.
One of our mutual friends, Sean, has speculated that
that's me. That's me.
that there's a possibility that teams will take over as the dominant tour on the PBR. I mean, you could say no comment. I have no idea if, I mean, that was that just from his hip, or is there any?
I think, you know what, I'd say it depends. I mean, it's growing rapidly, and we've got calls coming in for expansion teams all the time. Like, there is a lot of interest in it as a sport. I don't think we will never abandon individual bull riding. We will continue to award a world championship to the best bull rider in the world. But I think teams is going to continue to grow in the PBR portfolio because fans love it. I mean, year after year after year now, and entering our fourth season, we've seen just exponential growth year after year. And it's a different fan. And that's what some of the hardcore people that criticize teams have to understand, is it wasn't meant for you. Don't tune in. You know, if you don't like it, don't watch. But there's millions that are now following teams and don't know the first thing about individual bull riding. And that just expands the universe of people that we collectively have to market to in Western sports and the Western lifestyle.
Well, the brilliance of the teams concept is that a 75-point ride matters, right? And in all of the millions of PBRs that I've produced, when you do 45 rides, you're waiting for that one spectacular ride,
yep,
right? But what I've noticed in teams is that 8 seconds, however you get it, is critical, and it makes the non-90-point ride exciting. That's what I see in it.
Yeah, and the introduction of coaches and mentorship and the teammates, that now you have an obligation to your teammates and your owner and your GM and your coach. We've seen higher riding percentages this year in both teams and Unleash the Beast than we've ever seen in the history of the PBR. And the coaches are making better bull riders. I mean, they're riding over 40% of their bulls this year.
Well, that's an amazing stat, because one of my questions is, a bull rider's lifespan is limited. How many bulls, like, it's got to be the case that if you're not careful, you're going to have a need for way more bull riders than you have. I mean, I understand you guys are recruiting from everywhere in the world, which, you know, is there ever a concern, or is this talked about, that you've only got so many JB Sages, or you wipe them all out, and then what do you do?
Well, I think, yes, today and yesterday and the year before that, but we've seen an influx of new talent coming into the sport, and I'm a firm believer in, if you build it, they will come. You know, the money has gotten to the point now where it is hard to not look at professional bull riding and its ecosystem as a true professional sport that you can dedicate and commit your time to. You know, back in 5-6 years ago, the top 23 to 24 guys in the world made $100,000 or more in prize money. They were making money off of endorsements and sponsorship and other things. But when we conclude the world finals this year, in a one-year span from the world finals, end of world finals last year to the end of world finals this year, it's going to be close to 50 guys that have made $100,000 or more just in prize money. And then you layer on top of that the sponsorships, which are increasing, and the contracts that they're now getting from their teams. And the money is getting to a point where everybody always wanted it to be. All those founders really wanted this to be a sport where you put your life on the line week in and week out, and you're going to retire with something in the bank. And I haven't forgotten that from day one. And now this ecosystem is doing that, but nobody's forced to compete in all of them. And I think you guys know as well as I do that if we gave them a weekend off, they're going to go ride in some jackpot bull riding somewhere. You know, I mean,
it's so true.
John Krimber and Clay Guyton entered Corpus Christi in the Velocity Finals a week, you know, 5 days before the World Finals start, and I don't get it. It's like, take a weekend off, heal up a little bit.
So true.
But they're, you know, so they're not forced to do it. We've relaxed everything. We actually give guys now. You know the old rule that if you missed one out of the 30 events or the 29 events, you were out for a year. Right. We've relaxed that now, and they can skip three events in the course of the Gulfport Test Series season with no penalties whatsoever.
Interesting.
Teams, they can get rotated out by their teams and sit on the bench for a couple of weeks if they want to and still get paid. So, I mean, the bull riders' health is a lot of it, but I think in the long run, we keep paying that kind of money, and you're going to see 10 or 15 Sages and 10 or 15 Jose Vitors that are all vying for it. And then the sport's going to be like a rocket ship. Then we're going to have guys riding 60%, and it's going to be crazy.
On the Cowboys, on the teams, are they salaried or is it based on performance, or how does that work?
They're paid through a prize pool that's offered by the league, but the teams can sign them to an endorsement agreement that governs other terms, the length of their contract with their team, appearances, other things. So virtually all the riders competing in teams have some form of what we call an EA agreement. So an agreement directly between the team and the riders. And they vary. They're negotiated at fair market value between the teams and the riders. We don't have anything to do with it or say about it. And but it's significant. We do know what they are. They have to be reported to the league, but it's a significant increase in bull rider comp.
But it's still a situation where the best guys are going to get paid the most, right? And rightly so, right?
Yeah, there's been a couple circumstances where I'd say that not the best guys got paid a little too much. But, you know, that fixes itself in the free market.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the PBR's decision. The Kid Rock Rodeo is right around the corner. The PBR's decision after breaking away from professional rodeo in the first place to go back into the rodeo waters. Talk about that a little bit, like the decision to go back.
It may have been Tommy Joe or somebody else in our circle that I said at one point in time, if I ever get us into rodeo, shoot me in the back of the head. So I've been looking over my shoulder a lot, trying to remember who the hell I said that to. You know, that was actually developed really in the relationship that we started developing with Kid Rock. He was interested in a team. He wanted to get involved. And we sat on his porch one night and we talked about rodeo and just rodeo. And he's a huge fan. And what we wanted to launch was something that didn't take anything away from anybody else. You know, this isn't any of the other efforts to take something away from the PRCA or anybody else. It's one day in time. It may grow and there may be more than one, but it's one day in time that we're paying out $1 million to rodeo contestants. And in order for that to happen, it had to be something new and interesting for me. And I've always wanted to try and mix it up a little bit. So it's team rodeo and it's head to head. It's, you know, I think the best quote that I heard last year was, who the hell knew you could make timed events so interesting? You know, I mean, it's the barrel racing is a horse race. The roping came down to, you know, a couple of just microseconds in some of those matches. And it made it really engaging for a non-traditional rodeo consumer to be able to point to the field and say, well, that girl won, or that guy, that team won, that guy won. And they get it. They just get it. And the other thing that we wanted to do was change the paradigm of the rodeo opens for a big music act. You know, I mean, that works and it's helped in a lot of ways, but it's also hurt a lot of rodeos where the rodeo gets overshadowed by the music act. and we didn't want that to happen. So the music and the entertainment's integrated all throughout Kid Rock's Rock and Rodeo, and it's a seamless entertainment experience and not one rodeo, one concert. And we intend to keep doing that.
And you've also, you know, incorporated now the Women's Rodeo Championship into the, I mean, the actual finals will be part of the PBR finals, right?
Yeah, it has been the last couple of years, and we wanted to give the ladies a chance to earn their money and compete on the stage at AT&T Stadium. So, yeah, it happens on Saturday night.
Right. So, I mean, the women, speak of that. I mean, is that just another, okay, now what are we going to do? Something more additional, something more outside the box, something, I mean, is that like teams? Like, hey, let's bring these women center stage. It's an interesting concept.
A lot of this was born in all of the turmoil that, how do I put this the right way? There is a lot of pressure on businesses in general to get more woke, you know, to acknowledge these, you know, the Me Too movement and the Black Lives Matter movement and all this other stuff. And I didn't want to come through that and hang a banner and say, oh, look at us. We're all that because we recognize this cause. I wanted to do something more meaningful, which is why we put Bill Pickett Rodeo on national television on CBS and put it in front of a national audience. And it drew 2.5 million fans. Like, it was obviously something that appealed to the customer base. And providing more opportunities for women came out of the same thing. And so I started to do a little homework, and not to dig too much into the dirt, but we went to a prominent women's rodeo organization and offered them to subsidize the prize money so that we could get $1 million payout for ladies in the sport of rodeo. That's what our goal was. And I spent a fair amount of time trying to put that deal together, and ultimately it was used against us in the, you know, some negotiation somewhere. And I said, hell with it. We're going to do it ourselves. And so we just went out and launched it. We've got, I think we paid out $3.5 million, coming up on $4 million worth of prize money to women for across three disciplines. But it's turning into a great product. We just did a deal with Cowboy Channel for the broadcast rights. And again, we're not trying to hurt anybody or put anybody out of business. We're trying to create incremental opportunities for ladies in rodeo. They were underserved.
Is the PBR going to start being on the Cowboy Channel? Is that correct?
No, we put Women's Rodeo on the Cowboy Channel, and we're simulcasting the World Finals this year.
Okay.
On the Cowboy Channel. And actually, the Cowboy Channel has exclusive rights to the redemption rounds on next Wednesday and Thursday.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
It's no secret there's a lot of conversations going on there. It's way cozier than it's been in the past.
Oh, I mean, I went to the American this year and I was just blown away. It's such a great event. And having, you know, involvement with Randy in the early days of launching that thing to see where it's come makes me proud. Like, it doesn't make me jealous. It doesn't make me, oh gosh, look at what, you know, look at this. There's a new event that was invented from nothing.
Yeah.
That's paying out millions of dollars to rodeo cowboys. How can that be bad in anybody's world? In anybody's world. How can it be bad paying $3.5 to $4 million to ladies in the sport of rodeo that hasn't taken away a single opportunity from anybody else? Not bad. Same thing with Kid Rock's Rock and Rodeo. We paid $1 million our first year. And 16 contestants across those 7 disciplines earned $27,000+ per person for 16 people. How is that bad? It's not.
More money for the contestants.
More money. And you can't tell me that it's a problem.
Yeah. Is there anything that you'd like to tell us that's up your sleeve that you'd like to, like, you heard it here first? Is there, what, do you stay awake at night?
No.
We were just talking about midget rodeo, and it's a hot item. In case you're wondering, Kendra went and watched it. It's a, we can send you some videos. You may want to think about PBR's Midget Rodeo.
There may or may not be midget bullfighting at Kid Rock's Rock and Rodeo this year. That's the one thing I'll give you.
All right.
That's actually awesome.
He's a big fan of the smaller type. So.
I am too. I love it. It's great. I got a quick question before we leave on kind of the history of the PBR. And this is a tricky question, but let's take our people behind the chutes. We were all there when it was primarily those first guys, right? And the culture back there, the culture back there was inexplainable. We were all like pulling a wagon against everybody. And the bull riders, half of them would drink all night long and come make a 90-point ride. The Brazilians would train all night long and make a 90-point ride. And as we talk about this culture, this corporate culture, you know, you don't see as many, and I think this is a fact, Sean, I could be wrong, you don't see as many kids, you know, guys that come as bull riders because they've been riding bulls or been on the ranch or been on the family. You know, there's a lot of guys that are currently riding bulls that have never got in a van. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, and drove all and entered and rode and failed and rode. These kids are on a plane and in the Marriott. Like they start at the top if they've got talent. Does that affect, do you notice, or even can you say, it's got to be a little bit different culture behind the chutes than it used to be? Fair?
Very fair. And I mean, to be perfectly honest, I'm no longer welcome behind the chutes, if you define it as, you know, hanging out with the guys and whatever. They're all younger than, like, they could almost be my grandkids. Like, it's a, I'm three generations into this thing. So, you know, it's a different mindset altogether. And I miss some of that, you know, I miss that, but bringing teams back and bringing some of those old timers out as coaches has really, really helped. I mean, that's one of the things that puts a smile on my face is when I see J.W. Hart and Michael Gaffney and Cody Lambert and all those guys, you know, smacking these kids upside the head saying, hey, this is what you need to be doing and how you need to be doing it. And I think that's important, but you also can't change Father Time, and there's just a new generation of kids that, whether it's in bull riding or anything else, we're never going to get it.
Well, I'm just glad you created opportunity for the older bull riders, because there was a time when I was producing the PBR where we would have about 22 feature guys. Like, we would be introducing the world champion from 1998, and you know, that world champion may or may not be what he was in 1998, but he's still riding because he didn't have a way to make a living, is my point. And these are great opportunities for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're all about kind of hitting it hard. And the one thing that I thought, just get it from Sean, there's so much conversation about Cheyenne and the PBR. And so I'm going to dive into it. I'm going to shoot you some tough questions and see what you say. But for our people, we have a lot of no spinners that aren't necessarily rodeo fans. They do like to listen because then they go to the water cooler and they sound like they're a rodeo fan. But anyway, so let's just talk about the history of the PBR in Cheyenne, because I was there the first time we hauled the chutes down the track. And you know, there's what happens is we had a master plan. This is kind of a off topic story of getting all this stuff set up in the same time that they could set the stage up. And then, as you guys all know, if you've been to Cheyenne, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, there's this giant set of black clouds that come over the mountain and just come right to the Cheyenne Frontier Days. And I remember looking up going, what's that? And Jerome Robbins had said, that's rain. I know that. And so we made it happen. But just so 2004 to 2009, 20 something years ago, the PBR launched and went there successfully. And I remember the original deal. And Sean, I think you were just coming on board. But the original deal was, look, we'll guarantee you make as much money as your concert. Give us a shot. And we did it. And Then in 2010, Cheyenne switched over to the CBR and Tuff Heidemann's bull run. Didn't have no spin then, so we didn't have any way to find out what was going on, but they go there. And then that thing disappears into the, or doesn't disappear or whatever. But in 2018, the way I understand it is the Cheyenne Frontier Days calls you back and says, hey, you know, you want to do a bull ride. Now, Tommy Joe would have probably said, really? But you guys come back in 18 and you put a bull riding on until last year. And now they make a change to extreme bulls. All of that to say, did you expect, Sean, a little bit of loyalty from Cheyenne, given that you guys brought your brand back in? And then, and, you know.
It's, well, the story is a little different than what, I mean, same time frames, all the same years. But in 2018, I got a call from Cheyenne and they said, we've got a problem. Can you help us out? And that problem was that CBR and the CBR finals were already on sale. We were only a few months ahead of the event. They were already on sale and CBR was having financial difficulties. And they were pretty much assured that CBR wasn't going to be able to put on the event in Cheyenne. So they asked for our help. We got any ideas? And so I said, sure, we'll help you out. And we came in, we actually bought the CBR. So I don't know if many people know that, but we bought the CBR for $1 and assumed their debts. We struck a deal where one of the most important things to the remaining and surviving CBR folks was bull teams. So we put a deal together where we continued bull teams moving forward at our events. And then we went into Cheyenne and we conducted the final performance of the CBR on that Monday night and paid off their prize money. We did. And then went in, and on Tuesday, it was the triumphant return of the PBR to Cheyenne Frontier Days. So we really bailed them out of a problem. From those days, we almost doubled the gross revenues from what they were doing. I mean, we had a huge positive run. And I don't think they owe us anything. I mean, they don't owe us a damn thing. Do I expect a little bit of loyalty? You'd hope for it. We got nothing. And it was more of, I mean, it wasn't even a conversation. It wasn't I see all these posts out there. It's like, oh, PBR demanded more money or this thing, you know, none of that happened. There was literally no communication whatsoever until I got a call in, I believe it was in December, when I was told, yeah, we're going to go a different way. We're going to go with the PRCA and Extreme Bulls.
And yeah, And Hirsig said that he called you in October sometime around that and talked, but he made it sound like you were more, you know, like, okay, cool. You know,
no, that's not true. No.
Did you try to negotiate with him? Did you tell him that you wanted to come back or did you, I mean, I'm just wondering, right?
The way the conversation went was, we're going to go with Extreme Bulls. And I'm like, what? And he goes, well, you're not mad, are you? And I said, yeah, I'm mad. I said, this is the shittiest thing that anybody's done to the PBR brand in a long, long time. Yeah, I'm pissed off. And where's the loyalty when I bailed you out? And I just told him, I said, I won't be bailing you out again. So this one better work. And hung up, haven't talked to him.
Well, and then that kind of explains then, this is a good lead-in. You give me a good lead-in. The PBR decides to go 36 miles south of there on the exact same dates and put a major event on with a concert on a Monday and Tuesday. Now, I've read a bunch of stuff that you said, and I talked to Tom and stuff. The outside person would look and say, yeah, they're getting even. Okay. Someone could look at that and go, yeah, they're getting even. Right. And I'm not going to, we don't need to even have that topic, but here's what I'm going to ask you from a promoter standpoint. Okay. From a promoter standpoint, I'm looking at this. If anybody's looking at this, they're going, okay, you've got, you're bringing in McGraw and Party, I mean, congratulations. That's good. You're going into a stadium that seats 35,000, right? On a Monday and Tuesday. So that goes against most everything you and I have ever learned about selling tickets. A Monday and Tuesday. It happens to be on the exact time that a legendary brand is 40 miles north of you, where people go to it, not just for the entertainment, because Pawpaw went to it. And we know that, right? They just go there because you go to Cheyenne. And if I just spin the numbers, and I could be full of crap here, but you've got 40, 45 bucks a ticket at all 35 just in the concert. How the hell does that make sense?
Well, I can tell you that, first of all, we didn't just do it like arbitrarily. We didn't sit down and go, let's get Cheyenne. We had for a number of years, we had that event, and it's following Big Sky, Montana. So we have a run where we go from Big Sky, go to Cheyenne. So it was taking money out of PBR Bull Riders' pockets because there's no event now on that Monday and Tuesday. It was a real slight to our brand by Cheyenne thinking that, oh, they're just going to come because it's the daddy of them all, and basically saying, no, PBR didn't matter, which I took offense to, frankly, and need to defend our brand. And we started looking around and we found an incredible partner. And I can tell you that just in pre-sale alone, we've only been on sale to the general public for a couple of weeks, but between pre-sale and sales to the general public, we're about 2.5 times the entire gross of Cheyenne Frontier Days, both days, and we're going to kill it. We're going to absolutely kill it at this event. Now, I've gone on record and said, I hope Cheyenne sells out too. I don't care. You know, it's not about hurting them. I hope they sell out. But we had to protect our brand. We had to provide opportunity for our bull riders. And we found an extremely incredible partner in Colorado State University that wants to create some long-term events in their stadium that is a remarkable stadium. So, you know, who says that they own Monday and Tuesday? That's the bottom line. No, we own Monday and Tuesday on July just as much as they do, given all the years we've been doing it.
Nobody owns Monday and Tuesday, but not very many people want to try to sell 35,000 seats in Fort Collins, Colorado on a Monday and Tuesday.
Mark my word.
Except for Sean Gleason, which he's got the. Well, you guys know what I want to say here, but it's just from an outsider standpoint, right? Without the details, which is why we get on this show, right? Why would, you know, if you're sitting there, why is the PBR doing that? Oh, and now they're going to bring in McGraw. They're going to definitely, and it's good to hear your point of view. And I hope both events are successful. Here's what I think: indirectly, both events will affect each other some. It may be marginal, but it's going to affect each other some. And hopefully it's not. Hopefully you're right and everybody does great. But I don't know what is this grandstand in Cheyenne seat? 10,000? You know, that's a lot of folks, bull riding fans in one market. So,
yeah,
you know.
Well, I can tell you, I leave very little to chance. And you can mark my words, we'll be sold out on Monday and Tuesday. And it will be between sponsorship, all of the ancillaries, and ticket sales, it will be one of the biggest events we've ever put on.
That is, of course, I guess maybe I'm just scared compared to you, but that's a bold statement. And we'll bring you on when it's over.
Bring me on. I mean, it's easy for me to say that because I know where we're at now. And we're like 3/4 of the way there. It's like, okay. And we, you know, and that's literally in just the on sale and 2 weeks of sales. We haven't even started marketing yet. So it will be a huge event. I mean, it's going to be a huge event. And it's not a 1 year and done. We're going to do it. We're signing a long-term contract to keep doing it.
You're either going to make money or lose money for a long time is what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've spent quite a bit of time. I really want to say thank you. We'll do, Kendra, any final thoughts or on your end, kind of follow up or?
I have one statement besides saying thank you, because I also appreciate just the candid conversation. But my whole life and career is like more money for cowboys, cowgirls too. So thank you for the millions. And also it's like, you know, I remember well from the front row of like some of the things, some of the decisions guys have made. I mean, I'm just going to say like Sage Kimsey as an example, you know, he got all but tarred and feathered, you know, for that was a big decision. And I just have total respect for the fact and appreciation for the fact that he had a tough decision to make, but he made the best decision for him, his career and his family. But the fact that he had the opportunity to go win a fortune, I'm just like grateful for that opportunity in my lifetime. And I'd love to ask one sort of hot seat question, because I'd love for you to shoot from the hip. So this is like the age old. It's so fun to be in on these conversations when you hear people talking. Are PBR bull riders better than PRCA bull riders, or is the talent pool deeper, or what's your PBR bull riders, PRCA bull riders go?
Not even close. Our guys are 100% better across the board, from number one to number 40.
Now, so another question.
I mean those guys, good. There's some good bull riders over there. Some of them are the guys that used to ride with us, you know, but you have to understand the caliber of bull too. And, you know, that's what the guys that are riding in rodeo don't get on those rank suckers week in and week out. And it takes a special breed of cowboy to get on them and survive and succeed in that environment. And that's why a lot of kids come over and try it, and then they end up going back because it's a little bit easier path in the PRCA. They don't get on the same bulls.
And a lot of the decisions are also like, fact has to be good chance your career is a little shorter in the PBR just because the bulls are rank all the time, right? But it's like, if you're a bull rider, the next one could be your last one at any time. So you go for the big money while the getting's good, right? And I mean,
that's now why that's why I've literally, you know, I mean, the founders beat it into all of our heads in the beginning, which is these guys deserve more money, more money, more money. And, you know, all of the business moves and all of the being sold three times, I have not forgotten to make that opportunity available to the bull riders and have it keep growing. And I'm really proud. We keep a list on our website that everybody should go look at. It's called the annual money list. And it measures the prize money only, not endorsements, not EA contracts, prize money paid from the league to these bull riders. And go look at the changes over the last 6, 7, 8 years. And it's remarkable, you know, COVID aside, of course, but it's remarkable and still not where I want it to be. I mean, I want these guys to be able to have but teams gives them a little bit of that, like Cooper Davis. He just couldn't handle the up and down the road, you know, and being gone all the time from his family. And he's now got a couple years left probably in the team series, just riding in teams. Teams has given a lot of guys an opportunity to extend their careers.
Has Kai Hamilton, he's come over for some stuff, right?
He's come over and tried. He rode early in the year, I believe. He has an issue with the helmet. So
is it mandatory now in the PBR?
It has been since 2013.
Okay.
Yeah. For anybody that was not yet 18. So a guy like Kai, he's got to wear a helmet. We're not making any exceptions.
Okay. All right. Final question for me. What is the current overall riding percentage of the PBR bull riders as a whole? Do you know an estimate of that number in a given?
I think Tommy, we're over 40% for the UTB. If not, it may have slipped just a little bit under it, but
So that kind of goes to my question. I said I had these, we've been in, you and I have been a part of these conversations, Cody and Lambert and I have, and that is, you know, you can't, the day, what I used to say is the day you could genetically create an egg from McBride and Jackie Joyner Kersee and create a bull rider is the only time it's fair with what you do with the bulls, where you're putting seven gene traits together and creating robo cops. Does it ever, is there ever a conversation, because there has been some criticism from the PBR in the past that 60% of the guys don't ride. And so is it, you know, there's always been discussions. Do you lighten the bulls up? Do you leave it alone? Do you think your fans prefer 40% great rides? I mean, I assume you do, because that's what you're doing. But the question is, does the 60% buck offs concern the PBR ever? Or is it just one of
those? Not at all. Not at all. I mean, if you've been to any of the events lately, you know, it just, and you guys were there, and it always, the magic always seems to happen. Now, part of that is the way that we buck, the buck order, and who's coming out last, who's on fire, who's not, you know, and it's based on their performance. But when you got Dalton Castle going out last, and John Krimber, and, you know, the guy, and Brady Fielder, who are riding 60%+ of their bulls,
right,
you're going to end with a bang. And, you know, I always joke, you know, there's some events where you go and it's like you had three rides in the first 35 guys, but then the last five guys ride back to back to back to back, and the lead changes, and people are walking out on the concourse going, they rode them all tonight, Marge. You know, I mean, it's like, it just, they rode them all. No, they rode five at the end, but glad you thought that, you know.
The attention span of the American, right?
Exactly.
Well,
it always seems to bring the magic at the end, and that's what it's all about.
Well, I want to also side with Kendra in saying, what I most appreciate about you, not just coming on, but is the candor, right? It's these kind of conversations where someone feels like they're watching someone that took the film down, the CEO, the commissioner, all of the big titles that you put on your name to, because I know you walk tall. You've always been plenty self-confident, I'll put it that way. And so, but coming on and being Sean, I think that's the trademark of our show, right? And I think it has to do with Kendra and I, because we all have been there, done that, set in the airports
together. Like you said, it's our 20-year reunion from the last time we were all together. So
yeah, I look across the deal. Yeah, Gleason's dribbling. He's sleeping. Are we going to wake him up for the plane? No, let him sleep. No, wake him up. He doesn't want to miss his flight. So anyway, thank you very much. We appreciate the candor and the realism. And our goals are just to let people explain what's going on, because there's so much, believe it or not, fake news in our sport. And that's our goals. So thank you again.
I appreciate the opportunity. I mean, I spoke at the ARC convention, which is in Fort Worth, a week or two ago, and it kind of drug on. And I'm like, you know what? I just stood up there and I said, we are not the enemy. I said, I've got one message, one primary message to deliver to you. We are not the enemy. You know, we've sold this many tickets. We've done this in TV viewership. We launched this. We launched that. We paid out this. And we're open for business. So, summary, we're not the enemy.
Well, that's a good one. And we'll look forward to the midget bullfights. We've got some video we had in an earlier episode when Kendra put on her phone, and that's good watching. So best of luck for the Kid Rock Rodeo and for the finals and everything that you guys are doing. Hats off for continuing to pour money into our lifestyle, giving more and more people opportunities. The PBR is a very, to Kendra and I, as you know, that's a deep-seated brand for us, as it is for you. And we're very, very proud of it. And we want to thank all of you for joining us live. Thank you for listening on the podcast tomorrow, if you're going to listen tomorrow on the podcast. Thank you, Sean, for joining us. This has been episode 56 of No Spin Rodeo. Until we meet again, catch you later.